Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Where we live is one of the most fundamental things in our ability to thrive. Having a decent roof over one's head is critical on so many levels. When purchasing a home or renting a space, we want to somewhere that is safe, clean, meets our needs, and is within our budget. Some of us look for good schools, close to shopping, accessibility, and the list goes on. We want our neighbors to be friendly and give us a sense of community, who respect their property and ours. We want to be happy about where we live. Today's show digs deep into those foundational values. 2 weeks ago, two board members of the Transition House, the county's only emergency shelter, were on this show. I am very pleased to have a representative of the Good Neighbors Coalition of Cobourg here to give their side of the story to ensure we have another perspective on this situation. Next, two county representatives will be in studio to talk about the next phase of the Northumberland's efforts to provide affordable housing. On December 2nd, Cobourg Council listened to a report on specific needs within the town to meet the demand. Other municipalities within the county are also getting the same presentation for their specific areas. We will delve into the details to see what it means. So let's get started. A group of residents and business owners calling themselves the Good Neighbor Coalition of Cobourg launched a campaign to address concerns related to Transition House, the only emergency shelter for homeless people in Northumberland County. Since then, the group has made a public presentation to council. And it has been active in advocating for a resolution to the issues they raise, including increased and reoccurring problems with public drug use, people sleeping outdoors, verbal abuse and intimidation, disruption both day and night, including physical altercations, theft, and break-ins. With me in studio is Allison King, a representative of the Good Neighbors Coalition Cobourg. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
Describe for our listeners what you've experienced living in the Chapel Street neighborhood over the past 6 months.
We've seen, as you mentioned, we've seen a lot of public drug use, public urination and defecation on people's lawns. One of my neighbors found a needle. She lives right across the street from me and has three young children. I sat on my front porch over the summer and watched people leave from Transition House, go up John Street, come back, sit down on the steps of the Bell Building and shoot up their drugs, and then go straight back to Transition House. And these are the sorts of things that we've seen. In the 20 years that I've lived here in Cobourg, I've never had any reason to call the police, but once we started seeing these kinds of problems, you know, this, what else can we do when we see people shooting up drugs right in across the street from our houses?
Can you describe the neighborhood as you see it that we're talking about that's been affected by this?
Sure. It's a really diverse neighborhood in many ways. There's people there that rent their homes. There's some that own their homes. Some people have lived there for, you know, 20 years, like myself, or even longer. Other people are newcomers. We have some recent immigrants living across the street from us, for example. The immediate neighbors actually are people who are living in very small rental units that are not always kept in well repair by the landlord. So it's not like we are the rich neighborhood that just doesn't want a shelter in our neighborhood, because, you know, it's not about NIMBYism. And I think it's important that I say that because, you know, we've Transition House has been there as a form of a shelter. We thought it was a transition house as opposed to an emergency shelter. It's been there on that street for 17 years at least, maybe 18 years. And until this past year, there really was no problems.
So let's talk a bit about a bit more about the neighborhood, because I want people to understand it, and you've really helped capture it well. But just geographically, we're talking about, let's say, Division Street, Chapel Street. Where else in that for this coalition in terms of the neighborhood?
Well, we didn't track where people actually were from, so that's not a question that we asked. So if we assume that if people wanted to be on our mailing list, then they were interested in, and because people could be working in the area, not just living in the area. In terms of what's nearby, there's a school a couple blocks away. There's another school down at the other end of Chapel Street. There's a retirement home. There's also affordable housing around the corner. So this is a very diverse neighborhood. It's not just, you know, the big rich houses.
Okay. And also, too, I noticed on your website, you talk not just about homeowners, but also about businesses as well. What businesses are we thinking about? Are we talking about the DBIA along King Street? Which ones are we talking about?
It includes the businesses along King Street, but it's also the ones along Division Street. Mm-hmm. And Eagle is right next door to Transition House at the corner of John and Chapel. They've had continual problems with their signs being knocked down, and they've had to work with other neighbors to trim back their bushes. Other businesses along Division Street have had their mail stolen, and their checks that they were receiving in payment for services were people had attempted to cash them. I was speaking just today with somebody else that owns a rental, some rental units on Division Street, and she says every time they go there to check on the property, they find needles in their yards. There's one of the other businesses across the street. They have clients arriving and seeing people just sort of sleeping in the bushes by their, and it's, you know, people arrive and they're not sure what they're seeing. Are they seeing people that are injured and need help, or are they just seeing people sleeping, you know, and it's hard to know.
Now, you said that Transition House has been there for somewhere between 17 and 18 years.
Sure.
And then you said clearly it's been within the last year. What happened in the last year that changed things in your mind?
Well, we're not entirely sure. We have some guesses. We have a lot of guesses and a lot of questions, but not a lot of answers. What we do know is that Transition House closed down because of a serious assault against a staff member. They were closed for a year, so things were very quiet. And then when they reopened under this Housing First low barrier model, which a lot of the research does show that this is the right kind of model to be using. But what the result has been is that we're seeing an increase in problems. So whether it's Transition House is not necessarily the cause, but they've become like a magnet where they've become the focal point of where people are hanging out. And so whether it's because they're waiting for a space in the Transition House or something, some other reason that we're not clear on, you know, there seems to be something has changed, and we're not entirely sure.
Okay. Because when I had the members of Transition House board on, they were very clear in stating, look, we don't think we're the problem. They say that they have a no drug, no alcohol policy within Transition House. They say their workers are doing their best job to run the facility. They're limited in their scope, and some of the issues that I know you've identified and others have identified include mental health issues, drug abuse issues, all kinds of things that are sort of beyond their mandate. If it's not just them, is there anything that has transitioned or is anything, sorry, not transitioned, anything that has changed in the neighborhood in terms of, I know there's rental units down there. I also know that it's not far from Swain Street. And I know on Swain Street, for example, there's the Salvation Army has their facility. Cornerstone is there as well. Are those other factors that are those things being considered?
Well, those things have always been there as well, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, we weren't having the same level of problems. And it's not to say that there were never any problems before, mm-hmm. right? But it's something has changed. And the only thing that we can concretely identify as having changed is that when Transition House reopened, they reopened under this model. And I would say that I do not doubt at all that the staff are doing the best that they can because, you know, I'm sure they're working incredibly hard under really difficult circumstances. My question is, and this is where I said, you know, we have a lot of questions. So my question is, has this Housing First model been implemented appropriately for the context of a rural community, for example? Has it been implemented with the right kinds of support services in place? So you mentioned maybe some of these things are outside their mandate, but when you read the information about what the Housing First model involves, the most recent things that I've read says that it has to be implemented with appropriate support services for things like drug addiction, mental health, and so on. It has to have a robust case management system, and it has to have, they have to, it's built on the idea that the rapid rehousing is going to happen. In a community where there's a lack of affordable housing, how do you rapidly rehouse people when there's no place for them to go? So this is one of the questions. And, you know, in terms of, I don't know, some of the other things that we've been told is, well, they're adults. The people that are living in the transition house are adults. And once they leave the building, transition house has no control over them, that they're adults. They have to be responsible for themselves. And that's something that we agree with, obviously. So our question is, if these adults are engaging in risky behavior that puts at risk other people in the community, what can we do about that? If the workers in Transition House, who are hopefully well-trained in all kinds of, you know, de-escalation or crisis management or whatever, if they're well-trained, but when people break the rules within Transition House, they get kicked out, they end up on our street. And we don't have training, and we don't have the right to manage anything on our street. So what do we do, right?
So you raise a lot of good questions, and obviously we'll talk a bit more about some of the answers in a minute, but you drew a very clear distinction when you started talking about this being a rural context, a rural place. How in that your mind is that different, or what are we distinguishing when we say that?
Yeah, and this is something that I've thought a lot about, and I can't find any real research on it. Right. So most of the research that I found on rural homelessness, for example, is that there's a lack of resources. And rural homelessness tends to be hidden. All of a sudden, what we're seeing now is that this homelessness crisis has not been hidden. It's not no longer hidden. It's right there on the streets. The way that people are making decisions about how these services are being implemented, it seems as if they're following models that are used in the cities. In a city, if you think about it, a small area within the city is probably the same size as all of Coburg, right? So when you put all the resources, all the support services, all the emergency shelters in one small two-block radius of a small town right up against a family neighborhood, schools, businesses, and so on, what do we expect is going to happen, right? So if we assume that there are going to be problems, because I don't see a city anywhere that doesn't have problems when all of these issues come collide together, you know, what is going to happen to a small town where there's really only one downtown center, right? In a big city like Toronto or Vancouver, there's kind of like many downtown centers, right? In a small town, it's not the same. And I wonder about that. So this is one of the questions that I have.
So one of the things you pointed out, which I think is really critical to this debate, is this emergence of things that have been previously hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, not just homelessness, but the drug culture within our community has been very well hidden for a long time. Now we've seen just in the last 6 or 8 months, an emergence of an opioid crisis that had been sort of gurgling underneath, mm-hmm. but really hadn't emerged. I was checking back, and just in the last month, in November, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drug busts, and one this morning.
One this morning? Oh, I hadn't heard that.
but just arrests around multiple drug violations and fentanyl possession and all this kind of stuff. Is that a critical piece of the puzzle as you see it when, in terms of your coalition and trying to move forward on that, is addressing this?
I think it must be. I mean, there's only so much we're not experts. As a coalition, we're not experts. All we're talking about is what we see. From my personal perspective, I mean, I research everything to death before I come out with my feelings on this. And you know, this is, I mean, I don't even know how to explain it, but it, you know, the opioid crisis obviously is a national problem. It's an international problem, in fact, and it's huge. But it's not new. It's been coming up for a while, and it doesn't feel like anybody's being proactive in trying to catch things before they become really serious. I don't know if that really answers your question, but it's complex, and we don't obviously know the answer to it.
No, but obviously you're part of the issues that have to be addressed.
Yes, that's it.
You know, and I think that's critical. Now, have you spoken directly to anyone at Transition House?
So the only time we've spoken to anybody from Transition House is when we have asked for a meeting. Nobody's ever reached out to us. We spoke to the initial meeting was in early fall, I believe, if I remember right, where it was one person in the neighborhood said, we have to do something. It was before anybody, we gave ourselves the name of Good Neighbors Coalition or anything like that. And it was very much a public meeting. That's the one where you heard a lot of anger. And it was, you know, people were very outspoken, and there was a lot of, that's when I started to realize this has the potential to go in a very negative direction. And I think that we needed to work together to try and bring multiple perspectives together and to really work together. I don't think this problem is going to be solved by an either or perspective.
No, I was just going to say, so when you've had some other meetings as well.
Yes.
In walking away from this, at this point particularly, how do you feel about those discussions? Is there some traction?
So we've had another meeting where members of Transition House were involved, where we met with representatives of the county. It was not a delegation or anything to the county council. We're doing that next week. But it was, you know, some of the workers in the county. We came away from that meeting feeling like they really did not hear our concerns. We came away feeling like they just saw us as complainers. And I don't think that's accurate.
So this is with the county and Transition
Yes.
House. And in that meeting, you feel it went flat.
Yeah, it really, it felt like they were talking down to us, that this was kind of like, the problem is so big that nobody has a solution to this, and why are you complaining? We should just be putting up with it. And that obviously didn't go over well, where there were some pretty negative reactions as a result of that.
Now, I know I mentioned already to our listeners that you were before council,
yes.
Cobra Council, and how do you feel walking away from that experience?
The response wasn't unexpected. You know, there was a couple of members of the council that seemed to be ready to take action. And then a couple other people said, wait a minute, we need more information. And I would say, you know, they're not wrong, but I think things need to start moving a little bit more quickly. You know, this has been going on for a long time, and it's not something that should have been a surprise to the town.
Have you met with anyone else to discuss this issue? Any other groups or individuals?
One member of our group has met with a few other members of the town, as well as we've had some informal discussions with, the chief of police, for example, and things like that, but nothing formal. We keep working on it, but it's, you know, we have full-time jobs. This is not our full-time job, so it's hard to get everything done.
And just to note, I mean, the police have reported that they've been doing foot patrols in your area. Mm-hmm. They've also been foot patrols in the downtown. I noticed there's new signage that has been put up since this began about loitering in the area. So there have been some things that have been happening as well.
Well, some of it, but it's mainly been because we've been pushing and asking and, you know, calling the police on a regular basis whenever we see anything happen. And we've had to do things. My husband went across to the Bell Building and trimmed back the trees so that we could actually, so things were more visible and things like that. So it's been up to, it feels like it's been up to us to really try to make sure that our community is safe.
Now, you've mentioned a couple of times that you don't want this to be seen as NIMBYism, not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure people will look at you and say, okay, regardless of how you make up this pig or paint this pig, it's still a pig. So, you know, no matter what you say, when it comes down to it, this is about NIMBYism and you just want those people gone. How do you react to those people who say that to you?
Well, one of my neighbors says, you know, if you're not worried about what's going on in your backyard, you're crazy. That's his perspective. But I would say that we really need to look at the and rather than the or. I think we can do both. I think we can support the people that need support, and we can make sure that the community is safe. Because in my circling around all the different suggestions and possibilities and the different research, I think that the community will be safer, you know, no guarantees, but it will be safer if there is appropriate supports for the people who need it. And I keep coming back to the question, is just tolerating people sleeping on the street really the best that Coburg can do?
All right, so what's next for you guys?
What's next? We're meeting with the county next week, and another member is meeting with the police services next week as well. So we'll find out what they say. We do have that petition out there, such as it is. We understand that the county does not accept electronic petitions, which we did not know. There was nothing on their website that said that. When we started the petition, it was more to get people talking and to see that, you know, see if there was any interest. I was shocked by the fact that, like, when we put it out there, I thought we'd get maybe 100 people signing, the people in the immediate neighborhood. It's now over 700, which tells me this is a problem for a lot of people.
Okay, well, listen, I hope that we have you come back later on to keep us up to date. I think this is an important story, and thank you for giving us your side.
Well, thank you much for having me.
All right, up next, Northumberland County Director of Community and Social Services Lisa Horn and Housing Services Manager Rebecca Carman are coming in to talk about affordable housing. Please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back.